Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 23 of the Kitchen Stitches podcast. If this is your first time for joining me, I'm so glad you're here again. And for those of you who are returning, I thank you very much for coming back. I am Summer, and you can find me on Ravelry as Summer Yarns, which is S-O-M-E-R-Y-A-R-N-S, and you can find me on Instagram with the same name. We also have a Ravelry group that is currently at 94 members. I am trying to get to 100 members, and we do have a giveaway going on, and there will be more details about that a little further on in the podcast. I'd love it if you would join the group, and I've been a little chattier, even if it's in the mod notes, just because I have my schedule is a little off. I had been recording on Wednesday mornings for a little while. I finally had gotten into a rhythm, and then school ended, which has thrown me off. I'm feeling a little self-conscious today because I am actually recording with people in the house, which is very rare. I had been recording on Wednesday mornings when the house was empty, and now I'm having to find time to do it when I can. I love that my husband likes to spend time with me, but it's harder for me to find time to do things like this when he is not working, which is a good thing. This is not a problem I'm complaining about. I hope that y'all can hear me okay. I have my iPad positioned in a way that I think should be pretty good. If the sound is bad, just let me know in the group so that I can try to do something different next time. Like I said, I'm a little self-conscious with there being people in the house, so I may be talking a little bit more quietly than I normally do. What have I been up to? Really, there's not been a whole lot. I've just been kind of relaxing. We've had a few nights out. Like I said, school is out, so my husband and my kids are home. We've gone out to Brazos Bend State Park a couple of times. It's getting hotter, and while we had every intention of keeping up our hiking schedule-ish, it's not really a schedule, but the hotter it gets, the less we want to go out and do it, even though the whole point of continuing to do it is to make sure that we are in a good shape to hike in the mountains in the Smokies this summer. Maybe we'll try to go out today. Well, just depends. It's just so hot and humid here in Houston. We did one story I wanted to share just to show that we are not stupid when it comes to alligators. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you're a new listener, you should go back and listen to some of my other episodes where I talk about my alligator adventures. I have this fascination with the alligators out at Brazos Bend. And we've gotten really close to them just because they're usually sleeping. Well, the last time we went out, which I think was last Tuesday night, not night, but after I got off work, we drove out there, and there are lots of trails out there, but there's one that's a fairly short trail, maybe a little over a mile around one of the lakes, and we decided we were just going to walk along that one, and we didn't see very many alligators. I think we saw a total of 3 that night, which is not very many, especially for late in the day. But we had seen one swimming, and so we were kind of watching for it, and we were walking down the path, and up a little bit from us, probably, I don't know, 500 feet or so, we weren't close. There was an alligator who wasn't on the path, or she, whatever, but he was right off the path, and unlike normal where they're just sunning and they're not moving, and you can tell, I mean, you can walk right past them, and yeah, you're cautious, but you're not going to be disturbing them. They may or may not acknowledge that you're there, but you don't really feel like you're in any danger. This one was not a very big alligator. I would say it was an adolescent alligator. I would guess 5 or 6 feet long. Probably not much longer than I am tall, and not very big, but still big enough that you don't want to mess around with it. But it was a little bit off the trail, and it was very much aware of us, and it was also active. It wasn't moving, but it looked like it could move. And we Jimmy walked up a little bit just to kind of see, and we could tell that it was watching it, and its mouth was open, which I don't know for sure, but I think is kind of a warning sign. So we debated, and ultimately we decided that even though we were, you know, we could walk slightly around it, we didn't want to threaten the alligator, we didn't want to scare it, but we also weren't sure exactly what it might do. So we actually turned around and walked back around the lake the other way. Just so this is for those of you who have ever been concerned that we might be being a little reckless when it comes to getting near the alligators. We're not stupid. We do, you know, it's a case by case basis. And in this case, we decided that it wasn't worth risking it, especially, you know, we've got our kids with us. So there's my little bitty alligator story of the week. The other thing I wanted to talk about, I went and saw The Fault in Our Stars, the movie based on the book by John Green. I saw it with my daughter and her friend on Friday night. And if you have not read the book is... I'm hearing instructions from my husband to not disturb me. If you've not read the book, it is a very well-written book, but it is, I mean, you want to talk about pulling your heartstrings. I will give a little bit of a summary of it. The main characters in the book, both of the main characters have cancer, and they're teenagers, and they are both, well, we know that one is terminal, and the other, they meet through a support group. I'm not going to give too much information, but and you can imagine that it's going to be a tearjerker. And I did cry when I read the book. I don't remember crying terribly. I think I read a lot of it on the bus, so I kept my emotions in check, because, you know, nobody wants to sit next to this bawling middle-aged woman on the city bus. But we went and saw the movie, and I cried like a baby through probably a third to half of the movie. I mean, ugly crying. I came home and Jimmy just took one look at me and Laura and was like, oh boy. I mean, my face was puffy. My eyes were red. I even woke up feeling the next morning just felt like my face was still just puffy and a mess. It was a very good movie, but just such a heartbreaker. I don't recommend the book for someone who has personally dealt with this on a very personal basis. Obviously, if you've listened recently, you know that my stepmother died of cancer recently, but we weren't very close. I don't feel like that this was, I don't mean that to sound callous, but it's not, this was not personal in the way that it would be if you've had a child who passed away, or a very close friend, or a parent. You know, I mean, if you've had an experience like that, it may be too much. I would not recommend it, for instance, for my husband, whose mother died of cancer when he was 20. It would be too much for him still. So that's just a word of warning. It is fabulous, and if you are the type of person who likes this type of thing, I would highly recommend it. That also reminds me that I don't know how many of you have seen this, but there have been a couple of articles recently. I saw them on Facebook. One was in Slate, and one, I don't remember if they were both in Slate.com or if one was published elsewhere, but one of them was by a woman named Ruth Graham, who was talking about why adults should be embarrassed about reading YA or young adult novels. And I found it just such a presumptuous, snobby article. As a librarian, I think if anybody is, if you're reading anything, it's better than reading nothing. And her argument was that there are so many adult books that, you know, basically, why waste your time on young adult books? You're missing out on so much. But the presumption in her part is that if you're reading young adult books, that that's all you're reading. And I just find that so insulting. I read a lot of, well, I don't read as many young adult books as I did a few years ago when I was a teen librarian. But I read a lot of adult books. I mean, I would say 90% of what I read are adult books. And sometimes you just need something light, or you need something that's, I mean, it's an escape. There is nothing wrong with reading a young adult book. Another article that came out a couple of days later was a response to this, which basically said what I'm saying. And really, who cares what you're reading? If you're reading and you're getting enjoyment out of it, all power to you. So there's my librarian rant for you for today. Let's move on to knitting. I don't have any finished objects. Am I close to any? I am fairly close to finishing my Van Gogh, Opal Van Gogh vanilla socks. I'll talk about those in my works in progress. Let's see, is there anything else I'm close to? I don't think there's anything else that I'm really actually close to being finished. So we'll move on to my works in progress. I am working on my Mystic Spiral socks. I have finished, this is patterned by Josh Ricks, who is Sword of a Knitter on Ravelry and Instagram. He's also GeoKnitrix is his shop, or he's a designer. I am using Kirby Werby yarns in Grandpa's Rainbow Suspenders, which is a striping yarn alternating between gray stripes and rainbow stripes, and it is absolutely fabulous. And it has sparkle in it. I have finished sock one, and I am done with the toe and the first two sections of sock two. And I will get back to that. I'm alternating right now. I've mentioned that the methods of my madness before in terms of how I cycle through works in progress. Sometimes I am fairly monogamous. Sometimes I really feel like I need to touch more things. So right now I am cycling through about three projects and throwing some other stuff in. I'll get back to the Mystic Spiral socks on, what is today? I will work on those again on Tuesday. I am also working on as I mentioned just a minute ago, the Opal Van Gogh socks. I'm using the pattern, my Knitted Heart vanilla socks, and I cannot remember who that is by right now. I don't know. I'm not sure who that is. But I'm using Opal in the Van Gogh Starry Night colorway. And I am about halfway down the foot on the second sock. So as far as works in progress that are close to being done, that is the closest. I have relegated this back to car knitting. So it is stuck in my husband's SUV for when we are driving. And I've actually gotten quite a bit done on it the past couple of days because we've been carpooling my daughter around. Chauffeuring, that's what I meant. I am also still working on the Tannhaus Brook shawl. I don't remember I think I might have mentioned it as something I was going to start. I started it the day I podcast last. But I put it aside to pick it up on June 1st because several of the attendees of the Into the Wool retreat were going to do it as a knit-along. So I had done about five repeats in section two of that pattern and picked it back up on June 1st. The pattern is by Jennifer Lassonde, who is Boston Jen of the Downseller Studios podcast. It is a triangular shawl with a stockinette and some textured patterns and I think some eyelet sections. I am still on the first stockinette portion. And it is a very well-written pattern so far, very nicely written and presented. I am using Fibro Fibers Nightfall in the Into the Wool Special Edition looking at my show notes, I wrote that twice. It's the Into the Wool Special Edition. I mentioned this in my enabling last time, but it starts out with a kind of a sky blue color with green flecks in it and moves into a brown, like a tree bark brown. And it's really cool yarn. So far I am loving working on this pattern, and that's actually what I will be working on a little bit later on today. I am also working on the Hermione's Everyday Socks, and I started these on June 1st these are my monthly personal yarn club socks. I am doing them out of McMullen Fiber Company Squishy in the Katniss colorway from a Hunger Games Club from a couple of years ago. You may remember that I've used a couple of other skeins of that since I've been podcasting. This one is mostly orange with a little bit of yellow and with some blue and pinkish, not flecks, because there's more than flecks, but little small sections thrown in. It's mostly orange with these little blue sections. They are coming out pretty cool. It's not my typical colorway, but I am enjoying making them. And I may or may not have said before, but I feel like I can wear anything on my socks. I don't think I could wear this color close to my face, maybe a little too yellowy. As opposed to a reddish orange, it's more of a yellow orange. But it is really pretty and very summery. I just finished the heel on sock one a little while ago before I podcast. I'm using the OMG heel by Megan Williams. And I have done here, I'm making the cuffs about 5 inches. It's not that long. They're basically anklets. My goal is to be able to turn these in for Nerd Wars. And so I'm basically doing 1 week, you know, however much I can get done on the cuff and leg in a week, turn the heel, and then finish the sock. Because then I know that I can get that done in 4 weeks. So I think my cuff turned out, it's probably 3 to 4 inches. Closer to 3, maybe. I'm not sure. I'll measure it at some point. But these are turning out really cool. And it's the first time I've done the Hermione's Everyday sock pattern. And I honestly have no idea who the designer of that pattern is. Everybody's done it. So you can always find it in my show notes. I am also working on the Elizabeth Zimmerman Baby Surprise Jacket. I did several rows on this. I am using Koigu KPPPM in some unknown colorway that is mostly blues and purples and greens. Like I said, I did several rows on this. I had a little bit of a case of when knitting attacks a couple of days ago where I had made a mistake somewhere, miscounted somewhere along the way. So I had to back up a couple of rows. But I'm back on track and that's going okay. And then, of course, I am still working on my sock yarn blanket, the Shelley King pattern that everybody seems to be doing, the little mitered squares. I tried to do several squares in an attempt to catch up for the time when I was out of town. I didn't catch up, but I did get several done. And I have continued to do a square a day on that. And I'm still on track to have that finished well in time for my daughter's graduation a year from now. Spinning. I have actually done a little bit of spinning. I would like to do 15 minutes a day. I'm lucky if I can get in 15 minutes a week. There's just so many things that I want to do and so little time in the day once I get home from work. I am actually working on 2 different spinning projects. I have 3 spindles, 2 of which I like better than the third. And I have a shacked little beginner spindle that I got the first spinning class I took. And on that one, I am working on my spun right round that I took with me to Into the Wool for the class I took there. And I still don't remember what the colorway is on that. But it's oranges and peach to purple and hot pink, I believe. Maybe some blue, I don't remember, but it is really nice to spin. It's Falkland, and I'm doing really well on that. I could be spinning it thinner, but because I started out with it thicker, I want to try to keep it as a single, and so I am taking my time with it and trying to keep a consistent thicker spin, and I seem to be doing a really good job of that. I have done about a third of a braid and a little bit into the second third. I did a third, or almost a third, and then took that off the spindle and wound it into a ball and started on the second third. I'm very happy with that. The other that I am working on is a bat that my mom gave me for my birthday. And it is by Wooden Spinner. Oh, excuse me while I Google this. Sorry, guys. I think that is. I think it is Wooden Spinner out of Vicksburg, Mississippi. This particular fiber is merino with silk noil and Angelina. And it's very different to spin, especially it's... I've learned enough to know that I just need to pull off just little bits of it and then let it do what it wants to do. It is spinning very thin, and I'm very happy with that. I'm very interested to see how much yardage I get. Like I said, it's spinning very thin, and it's fun. I'm really enjoying that. So let's see what else. That is all of my works in progress, I believe. I don't think I'm forgetting anything. Upcoming, I have down that I was going to start the Sea Stones cardigan by Melissa Shashwari. I was going to do this for my dissertation for Nerd Wars, and I decided that I don't really want to do that right now. I had started a swatch, and basically I just have enough on the needles. I don't want the pressure of trying to finish this. I want to finish the things that I'm working on right now. So, that is in the background. Maybe one day I'll do it. We'll see. I also want to knit a pair of baby booties. I mentioned in my last podcast, I think it was the last podcast, that some friends of mine had adopted a baby boy. And I knit a barley hat for him. And I would like to knit some booties to go along with it. So I'll do that sometime soon. Enabling and purchased. I only have one bit of enabling that I have actually received. I used one of the coupon codes that we had from Into the Wool to buy from Fishknits Yarn. I bought the Mallard Full Gradient on her Opulence MCN sock yarn, which I have had my eye on, and I had favorited it a long time ago. And when I was looking through the shops that I had codes for, I saw that it was in her shop. And impulse bought it. I had a nice coupon for that too. I think it was 25% off. So that just goes to show that it pays to wait sometimes. I love Mallard ducks. I have loved them for as long as I can remember. My dad was a duck hunter, which, you know, I'm not a fan of hunting, but I know a lot of people are. But I remember, I guess he had, what do they call them? Decoys that looked like mallards. I've just, you know, childhood memories full of mallards. I even had a dream one time, many, many years ago, that I was with my brother somewhere and there were mallards and he was going to shoot one. And I was so upset because I just loved the mallards so much. And, fun dream, huh? Anyway, I love mallards. We actually have a couple of mallards that live at the pond or the lake. In my neighborhood, I like to go watch them sometimes. But this, back to the yarn, it is, like I said, it's a full gradient, and it goes from a darker gray, not charcoal gray, but kind of a smoke, like a smokestack gray, to a lilac, to a lighter gray, which is more of a kind of a pearly gray, to teal green, to brown. And it is so pretty, and I am just looking for the right pattern for that. I am not quite sure, but I need something that will absolutely show off the full gradient. So if you have any suggestions, I'd love to hear them. And then I purchased a couple of items today using codes from Into the Wool that were going to expire on June 15th. So I wanted to make sure I used them. And I figured it was a good consolation prize for not getting to go to the Yellow Rose Fiber Fiesta, which is about 2 hours away from here, which was going on this weekend. I didn't need to go 2.5 hours to spend very little money. I mentioned, but I used my yarn budget in May So I didn't need to go and spend money there. I suspect had I pushed the issue, I could have convinced Jimmy to go with me, but I decided I didn't need to do that. But that didn't stop me from spending just a little bit of money with coupon codes just to balm the wound. I don't even know if that's a phrase. You know what I mean. I will talk about those items when I get them. Let's see. Moving on. I mentioned that we are having a 100 member giveaway. We are at 94 members, and we've been at 94 members for about a week, so we need some more people to join. The prize for this will be a skein of sock yarn from A Riot of Color, and it is in the Key Lime Pie colorway, which is, it's a tonal green yarn. It's really pretty. It is something I absolutely would have picked out for myself. I picked it out without even realizing that the colorway name was a baked item. And as soon as I saw that it was a baked item, I knew that that had to be the theme of the giveaway. So, to win the prize, for those of you who have not already entered, you must be a member of the group, and then you need to go to the group and leave a message in the thread saying what your favorite pie is. We've gotten several entries, probably, I don't know how many, but quite a few. Quite a few entries. Just reading the thread will make you hungry. I am going to open, right now, I don't have it marked as no chatter, but I haven't been commenting on anybody's entries because I want to just be able to do a random number generator for this one. But I am going to open up a thread probably once we actually reach 100 members and have people go in and talk about the pies. Maybe share recipes, I don't know, or I may just ask specific people because there are so many good sounding recipes or some good sounding pies. One of the ones several people have mentioned is apple caramel pie, which I've never had. And key lime is a very popular choice, as is apple, just general apple pie, pumpkin pie. A lot of people like that. So I would love to hear what you have to say. And good luck. And I will pull a winner in the next recording as soon as we reach 100 members. I would like to also give a big thanks to Painter Mom, who is the artist behind A Riot of Color, for her generous donation of this skein of yarn. Everybody will be whoever wins will be very happy with the skein of yarn. Let's see. Christmas all year long, knit along. I'm going to only touch briefly on this. I have been a bad podcaster and have not really given much thought to this at all. Basically, you can knit any item that is intended as a decoration or an ornament or a gift for any winter holiday. And I am pulling prizes quarterly. The next prize will be drawn the first podcast in July. And that will be for entries between April and June. And that will be for a $10 Etsy gift certificate that you can spend in whatever Etsy shop you would like. That accepts the gift cards. And at the end of the year, we will do a big drawing out from everyone who has entered all year long. I haven't been giving it much attention. I think I've knit 3 ornaments all year. I really would like to get back on that. Let's move on to In the Kitchen. I actually have quite a bit to talk about today. Actually, let me add something on here before I forget that I want to talk about it. Alrighty, the first thing I wanted to talk about is a cinnamon roll cake, which was delicious. Let me pull up the recipe for that, because it has been a while since I cooked it. Let's see. Sorry for the dead air time. I don't think this is the recipe that I did. Maybe. Sorry, it's not scrolling and I can't tell. Come on, Mac. Okay, let's see. Yeah, it's basically the same. So you make a cake. It's flour, salt, sugar, baking powder, adding milk, eggs, and vanilla at the end. And to that, you add melted butter. And this uses a lot of butter. It actually, the whole recipe uses 3/6 of butter. So if you are not a butter fan, this is not the recipe for you. But it is so yummy. So you make the, I had to refresh my memory by looking at the actual menu, at the recipe. So you make the batter, which does not have butter in it at first, and then you melt butter and mix that in. You whisk that in to the batter. And I think that was a cup of butter. No, that was a stick of butter that you mix in there. You spread that in a pan and you set it aside. And then you want to make a filling, which is basically melted butter, a little bit of flour. It's basically a streusel, like you would do a streusel topping, except it's, you don't want it to be crumbly. You've got sugar, flour, and cinnamon. I'm thinking it even had a little bit of salt. I don't see this on this list, but had just a little bit. And then this particular recipe that I'm looking at has you spread the filling over the cake batter. The one I used, it was much easier. You just took spoonfuls and dropped it throughout the cake, and then you take a knife and you swirl it in. Bake it for 28 to 32 minutes. I think I had to bake it for 32 minutes. And then you let it cool just a little bit. I think I cooled it for about 15 minutes. And then you pour a glaze over it. And it's just a typical, powdered sugar, milk, and vanilla glaze that you pour over that. And then eat it. It's really good at room temperature. I mean, not room temperature, what am I saying? It's really good, pretty fresh out of the oven. After the next day, when I ate it the next day, it tasted much more like an actual cinnamon roll. It was delicious, and it was very easy. So that is one that I can recommend. That one I did find on Pinterest. I find a lot of recipes on Pinterest. I would say that the rest came from there, but actually none of the others did this week. The other three recipes that I am going to talk about all came out of the America's Test Kitchen Quick Family Dinners, I think is the name of the cookbook. It is a huge three-ring binder bound cookbook that has recipes that are pretty good for weeknights. And some of them are very simple. Some of them seem a little bit more complex. Most of the ones I have tried have been really good, especially considering the little time that it takes to throw them together. The first one I'm going to talk about that we did this past week was a shrimp and grits. And I didn't bring the cookbook in here, so I'm going to have to do this from memory. But this one was super, super easy because you use instant grits or quick cooking grits, which take about 5 minutes to cook, and pre-cooked shrimp. So literally this probably took about 20 minutes to throw together, if that. You make the grits and you use water and a little bit of heavy whipping cream and make the grits, and then mix in about three quarters of a cup of extra sharp cheddar cheese into that. Oh yeah, and you also, at the beginning, you melted butter and sauteed a little bit of garlic before you actually boiled the water and added the grits. It also, I think, called for shallots, and I didn't put that in. And I didn't think you needed it. So you make the grits, mix in the cheddar cheese, and then spread it in an oven, or a broiler safe pan. It called for a 4-quart casserole. I'm not exactly sure what size it called for. Whatever it was, I didn't have. And I actually, all I had was Pyrex or Corningware, which I'm not putting under a broiler because it will shatter. So I had some Kaflon, oven safe pans. So I have a big, not a Dutch oven, but it looks kind of like a mini Dutch oven. So I use that. You spread the the grits in there, and then you take the pre-cooked shrimp and just nestle them down into the grits. And cover it with more cheese and stick it under the broiler for about 5 minutes until it's starting to brown. And that's it. And it was absolutely delicious. If you, a lot of people aren't fans of grits, so it may not be for you. But if you are a fan of shrimp and grits, I highly recommend this one. I highly, of course, it isn't a cookbook, but I could write up the recipe if anyone wants it. The other recipe I was going to talk about actually was from Pinterest. I lied. I found it and it caught my attention because it was called a Mississippi roast. I don't know why it's called a Mississippi roast. I don't remember ever having anything like this growing up. But it is a crock pot meal and super, super easy. You take about a 4 pound chuck roast, put it in the crock pot, and sprinkle a packet of ranch dressing mix on top of that. And on top of that, you want to sprinkle a packet of gravy mix. And I used brown gravy because I happen to have a packet of it in the house for some reason, which I cannot remember why. But you could use any kind of gravy mix. Put that on top of that. And then put a stick of butter on top of that. I should just call this the butter episode. Maybe that will be the title of this one. You put a stick of butter on top of the roast, and then you place 5 or so whole pepperoncini peppers around that on top of the roast. And turn it on. I turned it on low and cooked it for about 10 hours. And it was really, really good. One of the good things about this recipe versus other crock pot recipes is it doesn't have any liquid in it. So you don't come home to basically boiled roast. This one, the only liquid you're going to end up with is the fat from the roast itself and then the butter. I did see comments on the recipe that from people who didn't think you needed the butter. And that's probably true, but it was pretty darn good with it. This is one that we'll make again. And it was really easy. I mean, this is one of those things. I got up at 6 o'clock went into the kitchen at 6 o'clock to get, you know, after I'd gotten ready for work and stuck it in there and turned it on and it was ready for us to eat at 4:30 in the afternoon ish. Well, 5 o'clock when I got home. And then the last recipe that I actually want to talk about that I have cooked this week is an easy chicken pot pie recipe from that America's Test Kitchen cookbook. And this is, it's not simple, but it is not hard at all. Oh, that's not true. It is really easy. This really is easy. The hardest thing off of it is picking chicken off a rotisserie chicken that you get from the grocery store. The goal of this cookbook is to take, a lot of the times, is to take recipes that would normally take a lot longer and to convert them into something that you can make for quick, or make quickly on a weeknight. So that is what they've done with this recipe. And instead of having you cook chicken or, you know, boil it or, you know, whatever you do to get chicken that you can shred, they have you buy a rotisserie chicken from the grocery store, which is genius. And that is a really, really good tip for any type of chicken casserole if you don't have leftovers laying around, is to just pick up one of the rotisserie chickens that you can get at most deli counters. The one I had was actually from HEB, which is a local or a Texas grocery store chain that is fabulous. But they have actual, it was like a, not shrink wrapped, what's the word I'm looking for? Shrink wrapped, is that the right thing? Vacuum sealed, I guess is what I'm looking for. Whole cooked chicken. So, which I find very helpful because I can buy that and I can stick it in the refrigerator and don't have to worry about whether you, if I end up not making that immediately, I can have that. It doesn't mean I have to do it the same day. The only problem with it is I find it kind of gross to work with once I actually open it and try to pull the chicken off the bones. It's just, it's cold and yeah. Mm. Tastes good though. Anyway, to make the filling for the crock pot, you take the shredded chicken off of the rotisserie chicken and mix it with I don't know how you say it, Bourzin cheese, B-O-U-R-S-I-N. I don't speak French at all, but you can find that usually on the deli counter. It's kind of an herb spread. You can find it with the rondelet or alouette cheeses. And you crumble that in and use chicken broth, a bit of salt and pepper and cornstarch, and I think that was all. Mix that up, heat it long enough for the cheese to melt and for it to thicken a little bit from the cornstarch. Pour it into a 9-inch deep dish pie plate and then use a refrigerated pie crust on the top of it and bake it for about 25 minutes. And it is really, really good. It is one of these things that tastes like you put a lot of time into it when you really didn't. And it is a big hit with my husband and my son. Not as big a hit with my daughter for some reason, but it is, oh, no, I know what I left out. You also put in about 1.5 cups of frozen vegetables. And I usually just, I will buy their assorted vegetables that have carrot medallions and corn, peas, and green beans. And I am not a big vegetable fan. I never have been. And I was really wary the first time I made it. This is one of those things that I put stuff in that it's not, you know, I can eat around, but I it's not going to be a big deal if I, you know, it doesn't lend a lot to the taste of it by itself. Like where onions, if you put an onion or a green pepper in something, you can taste it throughout the whole thing. It's very aromatic. This one, I put it in there with every intention of kind of eating around the green beans and the peas. Not really sure I was going to like it. But being the big girl that I am, I made myself try a bite with the other vegetables in it. And lo and behold, I actually liked it. So this is one of those things I can highly recommend. Like I said, my husband and my son really like this. Daughter, not so much, but she will eat it if I serve it. So those are all of the recipes that I have actually worked on this week, which it's been nice to kind of get back in the kitchen. I hadn't, about the last week before then, I meant to get back in the kitchen and it just didn't really happen. Speaking of, I need to go to the grocery store because otherwise we're going to be in the same boat for this coming week because we don't have anything to eat in the house now. The only other thing I wanted to talk about is a book that I recently finished. I don't do book reviews very much. I'll do cookbook reviews. I'm not very good at reviewing fiction. So, this one's a little different, but it has a cooking tie-in, so I wanted to talk about it. This book is called The Baker's Daughter, and it's by Sarah McCoy. It came out, probably in 2012. It was one that we considered as part of an awards committee that I used to be a part of. I want to think this one was on the list. And having read it, it didn't fit the criteria for that, but I definitely really liked this book. The basic premise of this book, this is where I'm terrible at reviews, I am terrible at telling plots. I just want to give too many details, so I'm going to try. It jumps in time between late World War II Germany and present day, or mostly present day, a few years ago, in El Paso, Texas. The main character, or there are two main characters. One is Elsie, and she was the daughter of a German baker who was, if not a member of, was a supporter of the Nazi Party in Germany during World War II. And this was an interesting perspective because everything I've ever read about World War II is either from the American side or if it was European, it was from a Jewish perspective, like Number of the Stars by Lois Lowry or I can't think of another example right now. But this one, it's not so much that they were supporters of the Nazi Party. They just happened to be German during World War II where the Nazi Party was in control and you lived your life. And in this case, this person had, the father had a bakery and it was thanks to the Nazi Party that they were able to continue to operate as a bakery. But the main character, Elsie, actually hid a German boy in her bedroom. So that was a key part of the story for a little while. And then the other main character is Reba, and she is a reporter in El Paso, and she meets present-day Elsie when she interviews her in the bakery she owns in El Paso about German Christmas traditions. So obviously from that you can tell that while Elsie was born and raised in Germany, she somehow makes her way to the United States. So you get to hear, it's one of these episodic novels, so you'll hear a little bit about, it'll go back and forth from the past to the present. Some people really don't like that. So again, this book may or may not be for you, but it was a really good story. There was a couple of love stories thrown in, especially with Reba, current day Reba, and how the relationship she's in and kind of dealing with her demons. And then Elsie and her daughter Jane, who were running this bakery in El Paso. And I think Jane was my favorite character. She was this true Texan woman who just happened to have a mother who was German. And she was just a fun character. But I can highly recommend the book. It was a good read. I gave it 4 stars on Goodreads. But the thing that I wanted to talk about the most was how at the very end, the author includes recipes that were supposedly Elsie's recipes. And I'm just going to talk, I haven't made any of these obviously, and I'm not going to actually talk about the recipes because I haven't really looked at them, but I am going to give a list of what's in there because it was a really nice touch to the book. But they included Reba's bread, which was a no dairy bread, and that is relevant to the story. And I don't speak German at all, so if there are any German speakers who are listening, please forgive my slaughter of the language. The second one was the Thomas Plitchen buns, which are sweet buns with currants, raisins, etc. rolled in them and icing. So kind of like a cinnamon roll or something similar. Maybe I would recognize them more once I actually made them. The third was for Lebkuchen hearts, Lebkuchen is apparently gingerbread. Brötchen, which were a type of rolls, and my son, who has finished his first year of German in high school, really wants me to make these, so I can hopefully make these and report back. Oma's cherry jam, which is just what it sounds like. Schnecken sticky German snails, which are cinnamon rolls. Matzbrötchen, which is mud bread roll, which this also is relevant to the story. It is a brötchen where you stuff something called a foam kiss, which is kind of a marshmallow type treat. I don't really know. Or you could use a malamar and you smash it inside the brötchen and eat it. Sounds very yummy. Schwarzwalder Kirschtort. like I said, I'm butchering it. Which is a black forest cake. Sonnenblumenkernbrot, which are sunflower seed rolls. Spiced crumb cake. And then a couple of recipes that are not German. There's pan de muerto, which is bread that Mexican or Latinos make for Day of the Dead. And then churros/crepes, which are fried dough, basically. And they're, even though one is German and one is Mexican, they're basically the same recipe. So I am looking forward to trying some of these recipes. They look really good. I'm really interested in baking more things that are not cakes. So this will be a fun way to do it, I think. And I told Eli that he's going to have to help me with the brötchen, which I don't know if I'm even saying that right, but it sounds good. I guess that is it for this episode. I'm sure I am forgetting something. I am 48 minutes in, so it better be all. Like I mentioned before, I don't know exactly what my recording schedule will be. It's kind of when I find time to do it. So just watch your podcatcher or watch my blog, or if you follow me on Instagram, I'll always post an image when a new episode is up. And I hope you are all enjoying your summer, or if you happen to be listening from the Southern Hemisphere, I hope you are enjoying what is turning into your fall. I will talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.